Alibaba with the 40. Kia ora, good morning. Welcome to Fringe Radio. I'm Damien, and I'll be with you from 9 till 12. We'll be reviewing shows that have happened and events that have happened and previewing some other ones. And we've got some guests in this morning. First up, we've got Jared Taylor from Creative Technology Northland. And then later on at about 9:30, Maggie Cocco is coming in to talk to us about her project, her show Science for Sociopaths. And then we'll be playing ahead of their opening show today at the Octagon Theatre. We'll be replaying an interview with Hayley Douglas and the cast of The Happy Prince that was done by Matt Keane earlier in the Fringe. Jared's here now, so we'll kick off with talking to Jared, and then after that I will let you know what's happening today. The first event this morning is at 11 o'clock, so you've got a bit of time. I believe there are still tickets available for The Happy Prince if you're keen to check that out at the Octagon Theatre. So, welcome, Jared.
Kia ora.
Jared arrived on a Beam scooter, so apparently going up Dent Street on a Beam scooter is a bit risky because the acceleration's a bit hard to control. I haven't actually ridden one yet.
Yeah. If you can press the accelerator really gently, it will move up the hill. Otherwise, it's kind of like, you know, you in a very heavy electric scooter pushing up a very steep hill.
Oh, I see. So it hasn't got enough power to get you up the hill unless you...
Yes.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
I thought you meant it had too much power.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a shame because there aren't that many hills in Whangarei, but I thought they would have sorted is it the gearing or something about the motor or what's the
deal? I'm not too sure. I think it's probably that I'm just too heavy.
So that's, I guess, an example of, you know, technology becoming a kind of everyday thing. And I don't know if they're making a huge profit. What do you think? Do you think Beam scooters the uptake is good enough, and do you see enough people using them in Whangarei?
I'm not too sure. I haven't seen the numbers. Obviously, there was a recent review of whether they were, because I think they were sort of on a trial period,
right.
And then the council got feedback, and obviously they're continuing. So I'm assuming that generally the community were not. Were sort of generally supportive.
Mm.
The council was supportive, and obviously they've either got very deep pockets or, it's showing that it can actually work.
And do you think in terms of, I don't know, like how much it costs, say you rode in from Riverside this morning, how much does that trip cost you?
I think that's about $5.
Right.
And for us, it's more of a case that, you know, like, for example, today my partner has to have the car.
Right.
I needed to get in here sort of fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a fairly quick, although slightly expensive way of moving about, but it's much cheaper than having a second car.
Right. Okay.
And you don't get as, you know, kind of sweaty and puffed out as like with a bike.
True. Well, you shouldn't really get sweaty and puffed out at all.
Mm.
Okay, so yeah, I guess that's a good argument. It's sort of like it's transport that's available when you need it, but it's not costing you anything while you're not using it.
Yeah.
Whereas a car probably costs you more than $5 a day to keep on the road, I guess.
Yeah, like the way the technology is going, I fully expect that car ownership itself will go the same way, whereby you'll just be able to have a car, you'll order one, it'll turn up at your house, it'll take you where you need to go, drop you off, and then you don't need to worry about parking it, you don't need to worry about the maintenance.
Mm. And it's in use more of the time than your car parked on the road is.
That's right. Think about how much time cars spend doing nothing. They're very, very expensive items.
But I think it feels like it's more like a culture change or a mindset change that needs to happen. I mean, the autonomous car isn't quite here yet, is it? I mean, it's here, but we're not seeing. What do you think needs to happen for that to become a sort of integral part, like Beam scooters are perhaps a little kind of example of a pioneering kind of autonomous, but What do we need in order to get autonomous vehicles?
So overseas, particularly in the US, you know, in a way, Uber and the other ride-sharing companies, and when you combine that with like Teslas, for example, and other electric cars that can run autonomously, and they're still working out the kinks and the bugs, I think it's close. In New Zealand, it will require a real cultural change of thinking about vehicles as a shared community resource rather than direct ownership.
Yeah, that does feel like quite a shift. But I guess it's like anything. It's like, you know, I always remember someone giving the example of when smoking was banned. At one time, it was unthinkable that, you know, smoking would be pretty much banned everywhere, and then it became a reality. So it can happen. Cool. All right. So tell us a bit about yourself, Jared. Where are you? What's your kind of background? How did you? What do you do? I mean, I'm guessing Creative Technology Northland isn't a full time job.
No. So Creative Technology Northland is essentially a group of people, like-minded people, that range from being very artistic and creative and not really, technological at all, right through to people that are doing projects on the world stage and involved in some very cool stuff. So the purpose of the group really is to enable collaboration and demystifying technology for creatives, enabling technology to be deployed and hijacked for creative purposes. It's a really great, a community group of people, like-minded, really wanting to help and support people in Northland.
Can you give us an example of that happening? Because you used the word creative a few times in that little bit. I would consider myself a creative person rather than a tech person, definitely. And you're absolutely right that for me, using technology is quite, you know, it's quite scary and quite, I definitely need support. So creatives perhaps are slower to adopt new technology, would you say, than people who are sort of in the tech world? Is that true, or is that a bit of a stereotype?
There's a real spectrum, and some people really, it's just not their thing to delve into the intricacies and the detail of technology and the time and energy and sometimes the expense it requires in order to really get under the hood and, use different technology solutions. Really, collaboration is the great opportunity for people that, and hence why we're quite keen to sort of demystify technology so that creatives can see what the potential of something could be. They might have an interest in using the technology themselves, but there's people out there that are quite willing to collaborate, and so a creative artistic person might go, look, I've got this vision. I've got this vision of how we could use this technology or how we could mash it up. Yeah. Orchestrate it, and there's people there that can then think through technically how to make that possible.
Right. Could you give us an actual example of something like that happening that, you know, recently? Or because you guys have been going since 2018, so that's a 4 years of doing this. What are some, can you give us an example of that happening?
So it ranges from general awareness and training around using certain types of tools, whether it be even something like using Zoom, for example, or using different software products like, say, 3D modeling, right through to collaborative projects. We recently had the Whangarei Nightlights in July, and that's like a really good example of creative people using technology in lighting and lighting effects and projections, and also the opportunity for creatives to work with technical people to realize a new creative vision that involves, you know, mashup of technology.
Right. Okay. So what about you? What's your sort of path into tech? Because would you describe yourself as more of a tech person than a creative person, or a bit of both, or what's your background?
My main background has actually been in the more the corporate tech sector,
right,
working on big projects. But I always have had, from when I was very young, I was dabbling in computers when they first came out in the early days. But I also had a great passion and love of art and creativity. So I've always kind of been in that sort of bridge whereby I haven't been pursuing a full-time artistic career. I've been full-time in the tech sector, and now I like to try and straddle both worlds. And for me, I'm most passionate about helping people that have got creative vision and how they might be able to use technology to realize that in ways that perhaps they haven't even considered themselves.
So if I, for example, had an idea for a project and I approached Creative Technology Northland, would the first thing be for you to put me in touch with someone who you think would have the skills or the knowledge to sort of work with me? And then would I kind of work with them sort of informally? Is it like a voluntary? How do people kind of operate? How does it operate?
Yeah, so Creative Technology Northland has got a website with lots of cool information on it. But where sort of some of the action happens is on Facebook. We've got a Facebook page, but then we've also got a Facebook group, which I think you were saying is pretty up to about 160 members.
Yeah, or, I noticed that on your website.
So people are able to join that group. It's reasonably active, where people float different projects they're working on, looking for people that might be able to help them with certain technical skills, point them in the right direction. It's kind of quite organic, and some people are quite willing to either point you in the right direction or potentially work with you, or to at least help facilitate and support so that perhaps a project can actually be realised.
Cool. So it's quite a resource of people by now then, 160 people.
Yeah.
With, I guess, quite a diverse range of skills and interests. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the Open Virtual Studio, which is your fringe event this year, your main fringe event this year?
Yeah, this is, we had Plant Lab.
Oh, yeah.
So that was happening in the Strand Arcade. That's now closed. So that was open the previous kind of 2 weeks. And that was lots of really cool, interesting technology with plants. And so that was very cool.
I didn't make it to that. So the Strand Arcade sort of in the sort of public areas of it?
They took over one of the shops.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. Yep. Cool. Can you tell us a bit more about that? Just like what was the sort of, what's the idea? What's the kind of, how does that work? Plants and technology.
Yeah, so that's really about understanding that plants are living beings. Mm. They give off electrical signals, and it's about playing around with how those electrical signals can be interpreted, enhanced, used to provide visuals. There's not that this happened at Plant Lab, but I saw a recent TikTok video where there was a plant that's been wired up to technology, and it's machete wielding. So if you go online and look up machete wielding plant, you might be able to find it.
How does that? What you mean? The electricity somehow turned into an image of that, or
no? So the plant was then linked up to a robot arm, and so the plant was controlling the robot arm machete
through the electrical signals that it was giving off.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. They can't be very powerful electrical signals. They must be quite small and quite hard to pick up, or.
Not my area of specialty, but the electrical impulses from the plant are identifiable, and that can be then an input into another device that's powered that can then have different controllers and effects happening.
Wow! So sort of the idea that plants are conscious, kind of that feels like not a million miles if their signals can be used to manipulate something. God, how interesting. All right, so tell us a bit about the Open Virtual Studio, which is on today, which starts at 2:00 today and runs for 4 hours online.
Yeah, so we've got three free events. The first one is the workshop at 2:00. Then we've got another workshop at 3:30 p.m. and then just a general hangout networking from 5 p.m. So at 2 p.m., that is just a standard kind of Zoom online workshop. We're focusing that towards artists and creatives and really anyone that's interested in the metaverse to help kind of demystify the metaverse, virtual reality.
Is that, are those terms sort of interchangeable, the metaverse and virtual reality?
They're kind of used interchangeably. Think of the metaverse as kind of the umbrella kind of space in which a lot of the technology happens. And so VR is a technical tool for creating specific worlds and environments of which many, many thousands of different VR spaces now exist, and you can kind of navigate through them through the metaverse.
So you know, from a complete entry level point of view, to me, the metaverse is sort of Facebook's rebranding of itself as Meta. Is that sort of them trying to kind of take over the concept of the metaverse, or how do you see it?
Absolutely. So that's exactly why they did it, because they're basically putting their bets on the metaverse as being the future of social connections, and so what they want to do is own it. And so this is why it's actually really important that we take this opportunity to not allow the metaverse to be hijacked by the big tech giants. There's lots of platforms out there that are breaking away from the big tech giants, and it's a really great opportunity for us to carve out our own space before the tech giants own it and charge a hefty, entry fee.
Can they own it? I mean, do we live in a world where that's possible now? I'm thinking, cryptocurrency, I don't know much about it either, but my understanding is that it's a technology that can is more democratic, more, less about big banks. What is it comparable to that?
I think we only need to look at the big tech giants and see how monopolized the system has become
already.
So social media, Facebook is it. Lots of people have tried to, even Google tried to come up with a Facebook alternative, but Facebook is still dominant.
Is that because it keeps buying up competitors? Is that sort of how, because I think it owns Instagram now, doesn't it? So what is that, how it operates? It just keeps it sort of acquiring new platforms?
I suppose one way to think about it is customer ownership. So if you think about Microsoft, for example, if you're not an Apple user, you're probably a PC user, and so you use Microsoft products, and there's not many alternatives unless you're actually quite a technical person and can install the alternative. Gmail, a lot of people got Gmail accounts. A lot of people think now phones. So who are the two big players in phones? It's Apple and it's Android, using Google software.
Right. So sounds like you don't think that's a healthy thing for everything to be so monopolized. It's not good. It's a bit. Is it sort of. What's the word? Ominous? Is it sort of like, is it about control and about, gathering and using our information still, that sort of argument?
Look, I think it would be naive to think that Facebook's play around the metaverse is to further deepen the data that they're collecting in an even more intrusive way.
So all the publicity around that, with what was that big scandal in England with the Trump elections and Cambridge Analytica and all that. So did that not sort of cause systemic change? Did it not? Do you think things just carried on as they were after that?
There's been lots of various legal cases. I think in Europe and the EU, they've probably been the strongest in implementing data privacy protection. But still today, it's not transparent, where all of our personal data is, how it's being used. How common is it that you just happen to have a random conversation to someone about something, and then within sometimes a matter of minutes, you're seeing ads for something that you were talking about?
Yeah, I think we've all had that experience.
Yeah.
And I guess occasionally we worry, and then a lot of the time we just carry on. And Because, I mean, what do we do? What do you do if you don't like that?
Mm.
You know, how do you protect yourself from that?
Yeah, it's very easy. It's not that easy to opt out. You often get people rage quitting various platforms like Facebook. But at the end of the day, even with Fringe, for example, Fringe and all the various artists and performers are using Facebook to try and promote their events, to engage with their audiences.
Yeah.
And there's not really much of a alternative. You've got TikTok, which obviously is very popular.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously one of the big concerns around TikTok is that has links with China. And China's, track record with collecting data and using data also is probably something to be very wary of.
Yeah. I remember reading that data is worth more than oil, you know, in terms of a commodity. And that, I think, for me was a bit of a, you know, bit of a moment where I was like, is that, that's the world we live in? And it's still hard for people like me to conceive or conceptualize of something that's not really material to be more valuable than something that, without which, you know, our society would grind to a halt with a very short, you know, short amount of time. Interesting. I guess these are the conversations that are going on, and it still feels like a frontier. Still feels like a kind of a brave new world for a lot of us. It's sort of hard to kind of conceptualize and understand. And then phrases like the metaverse. So the metaverse is being used as a, you know, it's not. We're not talking about the internet anymore. We're talking about internet's part of the metaverse, but the metaverse is bigger than just bigger than the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is more than just VR. There's also, just to throw some other kind of terms around, and you mentioned cryptocurrency earlier. There is what they call Web3, which is kind of like the next evolution of the internet. There were thoughts and beliefs that Web3 would help democratize the internet much more.
Right.
But with the big players now focusing on getting into the metaverse, that's kind of starting to slip away.
Right.
But there are still really great opportunities around another term here, tokenomics. And actually on our on our Creative Technology Northland webpage, we recently had a really cool person called C. Ainsley, who actually was gave a really good chat and overview of terms like the blockchain, the metaverse, NFTs, non-fundable tokens is also something that a lot of people in the creative world, lots of quite famous DJs and musicians and artists are sort of getting into these things called NFTs. And so there's this whole kind of technical sort of evolution happening in the background, whilst many of us are kind of continuing on perhaps our normal pathway and analog of doing things. And so this is why we wanted to run these workshops during Fringe to really try and engage with artists and creatives to try and help demystify what's happening out there,
right,
and to potentially find opportunities for them to find a way to use this new technology in new and different ways.
Cool. Yeah, that looks a really interesting, he looks like an interesting person. The description is he lives a flexible, adventurous, low-key lifestyle while maintaining numerous projects on the road for 7+ years. So I guess, you know, that to me speaks of freedom, and hopefully the technology will enable people to live more, for want of a better word, free lives or more flexible lives, and be less tied. You know, that hopefully the technology will, you know, do that for us rather than enslave us. It's that sort of, you know, that kind of difficult, you know, which way are we going, you know, in dystopia, or are we going to some sort of, you know, tech utopia? What do you think?
Well, certainly over the last 2 years, you know, the whole notion of working from home, working remotely, really took off. because of the circumstances that we found ourselves in. Mm. Some of the things that I've been kind of rabbiting on about for several years now, even before the pandemic, is that Whangarei is actually in a quite unique place because in many areas we've got very fast high-speed internet. Mm-hmm. Many people wouldn't realise this, but there are lots of people who live up here because of family lifestyle, and they work with international organisations, international teams. Mm. I also do some work with a team that's based in Germany, but also based in India. Mm. There's many people that have taken advantage of the fact that we don't have to, we can choose our location where to work because of the availability of technology. And in Whangarei, there's no reason why the young emerging generation can't have very well-paid, active careers while still working from Northland.
Great. Okay, we're nearly out of time. So, and Maggie Coco has arrived, so she's our next guest. So for people who are interested in taking part, what do they need to do?
The easiest thing is to go to our website, which is creativetechnorthland.co.nz, or look up the Fringe program and find us there, and then you'll hit our webpage, and all the details, the times, and how to connect will be on there, and we'll be updating that with the various links to join the Zoom calls during this morning.
Awesome. So there are a couple of links with this statement saying you need to check our support guide for equipment prerequisites, but for the first bit, it's just you just need to be on Zoom or on your phone?
Yep. So you can either connect in over the phone and via Zoom, and we'll run that workshop. Yep. And if people are interested, we can then provide all the details for the rest of the events happening this afternoon.
Right. And so the final stage is hang out with a bunch of geeks in another reality. It's a nice description. I guess a sense of humour and a sense of, you know, accessibility and inclusivity is quite important for this sort of world, because not even for people like me, I mean, for people like me, it can feel daunting, that some of the language and some of the concepts, and I guess it feels to me like this is an attempt to sort of, encourage people to embrace it and sort of become familiar with it.
Yeah, and break down some of those barriers to show people that the barriers to entry are initially quite low. Mm. And notwithstanding that, for some people it's not going to be their thing, but if they get the opportunity to see what's there, that might spark, a potential vision or creative project and idea that they have we might be able to help with.
Awesome. Well, it's been great talking to you, Jared. Thanks so much for coming in. And I encourage people to go. Everything you need is on the Creative Tech Northland website, creativetechnorthland.co.nz, and it kicks off at 2 o'clock today. So thanks again for coming in. And where are you off to now? Are you back on the beam, or are you...
Back to the Quarry Art Centre. We've got a fabulous kids art program that we've been running over these last 2 weeks. So going back there to support that.
Is that involving tech, or is that just...
That's going back to really good old analog paint and clay and mixed media.
Awesome. All right, thanks so much for coming in, Jared.
Thanks, Damien.
And I'll just play a track, some Baroque pop for you while we get Maggie set up, and... Yep, be back in a sec. welcome back to Fringe Radio. That was Born Under Punches, brackets, The Heat Goes On, by Talking Heads. Very distinctively by Talking Heads. And Maggie was singing along, and I was like, do you know the name of the song? She's like, no. And I was like, well, how could you be singing along then? You just know it.
Yeah, it's probably just in the ear.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, welcome to Fringe Radio, Maggie. And you're here ahead of your two shows at the Octagon Theatre, one on the 13th of October, this Thursday at 6:30 p.m., and one on Friday the 14th at 8 p.m. Do you like the Octagon as a venue for your show?
I do. It's so every show is different because there's audience participation, and so the different venue necessitates we adapt to the venue, right, basically. So
does audience participation involve them coming up on stage with you, or
it depends? Yeah, so it's literally always different. So I have a song cycle that I've composed between 10 and 12 songs that tells a narrative. So this is the premiere of the second song cycle.
So what's the definition of a song cycle?
So a song cycle is a sequence of songs that together tell a singular narrative.
So would that Put Up and Shut Up have been an example of a song cycle?
Possibly.
You didn't see that?
I didn't see that
one. Okay, so it was a performance of some songs from an upcoming musical telling a story of a woman who went through forced adoption, was subjected to forced adoption.
Yes, could be a song, could be considered a song cycle.
Right.
Mine is adapted, is adapted from the, I suppose you would call it the classical music sense, because I studied opera and I studied song cycle, right, which is a type of song that was written for opera singers to sing in their off-season kind of thing originally, and then it became its own thing. But it's got particular, like the relationships between the keys between the songs, and there's motif that carries on throughout the cycle and things like that. So
musical motifs.
So I would say that you could consider what they did a song cycle, and this is that to a slightly more specific degree.
and in terms of, so musical was the genre that they were operating in. So I guess what was your genre in musical terms?
Right. So I would say that mine is theatrical pop ballads.
Right. There's probably a playlist on Spotify called exactly that.
Yeah.
Because there's a playlist for everything. So you say it's different every time. So every performance is, the song cycle is essentially the same. The songs are written,
yeah, but they're kind of bones. So I know what the melody's going to be, more or less. I know what the chord structure is going to be, more or less, and what the themes are and things like that. But I play it differently every time because I'm trying to account for the emotion that the audience is giving me, and also the emotion that the artist is bringing to the song cycle.
Right. Wow. So how do you gauge, or how does that register with you, the audience emotion? Is it to the kind of the verbal feedback they're giving you, or?
It can be. It's often, though, more an unspoken kind of an energy that you're reading in the room.
Right.
Yeah.
So what happens if that energy is quite low or quite flat? Like, how do you acknowledge that with the audience, or do you just work with it as is? Or?
Well, your typical music performance, which is, you know, what I come from, is more typical, is with you sort of generate the energy and then get the audience into it, and then there's back and forth. So there's that element of it in the same way.
Right. Okay. So this piece of work has been around for a while, because I've seen the Science for Sociopaths is the name of the song cycle.
So that's the name of the project. So there's different song cycles. So the last song cycle was called Like a Moth, and one was the one that we toured for. We premiered it at the first Fungaday Fringe, and then toured it around, did really well with that. And then this is the premiere of the second song cycle. So Science for Sociopaths is the project, and then it's a little bit different from your typical music project in that there's the name of the project, and then there's the name of the song cycle. You can almost think of it as the name of the album kind of thing.
I see. So what's the name of this song cycle or album?
I don't know yet.
Oh.
It hasn't told me.
Right. What was the first one called? Sorry.
The first one was called Like a Moth.
Like a Moth. Okay. And did that, was that some somehow kind of telling us something about the...
Yeah, it just came up in conversation with a friend as I was talking. We were talking about what the song cycle was about. So the first song cycle was about a relationship that doesn't work out, but it takes you from the onset of the relationship all the way to the breakup and through a little bit of the aftermath and talks about, it's from a first-person perspective, but it's what you learn about yourself through that.
So like a moth to a flame, was that the kind of... Right. Mm. Okay, so what's the narrative in this song cycle? Are you allowed to tell us, or are you trying to want it to be a surprise?
Happy to. So this new song cycle is about interpersonal and systemic abuse and resilience. So it takes a character from birth through young adulthood.
Right. So say that one more time. It's about...
Interpersonal and systemic abuse and resilience.
Right.
So the character experiences... it's not about... Well, it could be. It could be about the kinds of abuse that is prosecutable, you know, like being physically beaten and stuff like that. But it's more about the things that everybody experiences, but we don't really have ways to hold people accountable for yet.
Right.
Buzzwords. We have buzzwords for them, like gaslighting and things like that. It's a lot about that kind of stuff.
Right.
And sort of shining a light on how that manifests in everyday relationships, parent-child relationships, romantic relationships, friendships, things like that.
So in terms of prosecutable, it's possible that it would never be possible to prosecute that, but awareness is the key. It's
like, absolutely, yeah.
So that people won't let those things be done to them.
Yes.
Perhaps.
Yeah. Okay. Or it's about the cycles, you know, because like people who are born and raised into those things, it's not about blaming your parents necessarily. It's about recognizing, you know, what you've inherited and sort of getting beyond that so that those cycles don't continue.
Mm. Okay. Well, you brought a guitar in, so it'd be good. Perhaps a good moment to have a song.
Cool.
What are you going to do for us?
Okay. So I'm going to do a song called Mother Dearest. Oh, I'd like to point out that this song cycle is on piano, not guitar. I'm doing guitar specifically for this.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if my...
So you'll be playing in the show, you'll be playing piano.
Piano, right. Oh. So just so you know, I try not to do disclaimers, but this is a disclaimer because I've only played on guitar today.
Your preference is to play piano.
Yeah.
Why is that? Just before you, like, what is it about piano that...
I'm a vocalist by trade, and I approach instruments very much from a music theory perspective, from a music theory background. So I don't speak instrument particularly fluidly, and piano is just much easier to see, theory wise, what it is that I'm trying to accomplish.
Right. So, and on stage, is it just you and the piano, or
it's me and the piano, and then the artist that I'm working with,
okay.
Which I'll tell you more about in a second. Yeah.
Great. So this one's called Mother Dearest.
Mm. Were you too young? Were you too old? Were you too broken, beaten, blue, or just naive? Was it too much or not enough? Did you lose every piece of your identity? Then there was me. I don't wanna break your heart tonight. I don't wanna have this same. But I'll never make the same mistakes you made. Can you tell me truly wherein lies the pain? Mother dearest, does it hurt to see me cry? Mother dearest, did it ever feel like a lie? Is that why you said I love you? Is it all right now that I'm grown? Have you found something in this world?
forgive me for asking, but I'm hoping that we can both find some relief. Just maybe we can start to heal your heart tonight. We don't need to have Mama, I'll never make the same mistakes you made. Can you learn to live, to let go of the shame? Mother dearest, does it hurt to see me cry? Mother dearest, did it ever feel like a lie? Is that why? Mother dearest, does it hurt to see me cry? Mother dearest, did it ever feel like a lie? Is that why? Take this cross from me. Mother, will you ever let it be? You don't need to live. Just naive.
Thank you. Wow, that was beautiful. So that's Mother Dearest, and whereabouts in the cycle does that appear? Which part of the show is that?
I believe it's number 8 out of 11.
Right. Mm. Is that reasonably fixed? Like the order that you play the songs in?
Yeah.
Okay.
I probably won't change that up because I do let the artists that I'm working with know ahead of time kind of what the sequence of events is, roughly. Okay. Yeah.
So how did the concept of the idea for the show being about interpersonal and systemic abuse, is that what sort of was the starting point for you, or did you write the songs and then the theme came out of that, or
I wrote about half the songs and then the theme came out of that. This one also follows from the first song cycle, so I had a back catalog of albums and singles and just unreleased, unrecorded songs. And the first Fringe was the first opportunity that I had to perform coming out of lockdown, but I didn't feel like my music was particularly fringy, so
interesting. Yeah,
so in order to sort of open myself up from beyond the typical music performance, what I've done, I was new to New Zealand at the time. I only got here 3 weeks before lockdown.
Wow.
The first one. And I reached out to Fringe. Registered and I reached out to Fringe and I was like, hey, can you connect me with any visual artists who would be interested in collabing? And I thought, that'll be it. I'll play my songs and then someone else will do their thing and that'll be the thing. And then as I was deciding which songs to do, I was seeing these themes and I was like, ooh, I could do a song cycle because I loved studying song cycles in school. And so then I pulled these songs up and I was reorganizing them and developing them and doing what my mom affectionately calls mental masturbating. which I adore. So I had a really good time doing that. And then I was doing the first show at Wham. Mm. And they had this huge interactive sculpture there that was by Kim Groeneveld and Trent Morgan. So that was the room that we were going to be performing in. And I was like, ooh, we should make use of this. So worked with, my first show was with a couple of dancers. And what we worked out was because they were dancing in front of this ginormous sculpture, we just gave the audience an opportunity to manipulate the sculpture in between songs and basically changed the background of what was happening, but invited them to really think about it and be creative about it and be like, how are you feeling right now? And see if you can't, through this sculpture, kind of be a part of the show. And so we filmed it and we took pictures throughout, and you could see the development of it and how the piece was sort of coming apart, and then at the end how it kind of came back together.
So they were quite sort of receptive to that. They were quite they kind of knew what to do.
It was stunning. I mean, there's no right or wrong way to do it, which is the beautiful thing about this. And again, one of the reasons that it turns out different every time, because the venue's different, the collaborating artist is different. So at this point, I've done this with painters and dancers and light projection specialists and physical theater practitioners, and it's always very, very different. So it's my lens, but then it's filtered through the collaborating artist lens, and then the audience gets an opportunity to demonstrate how things have been filtered through their lens, and we're creating a cumulative awareness and a cumulative discussion.
So tell us a bit about the artist that you're working with for these two shows then.
Yes. So I'm working with Josh Kiwi Kiwi on Thursday. And Josh is a very exciting self-taught Whangarei-based artist who has just through his, incredible artworks, but also online presence and other skills, developed an international following. And so I'm very excited to be working with Josh. And Josh has never done anything like this before. Actually, most of the artists I work with have never done anything like this before.
It's quite an unusual concept, or quite an unusual kind of confluence of things.
They tend to be one-offs, so they're very cool in that way.
So what medium will he be working in? Like, what?
He'll be working with paints, because we'll be in a closed setting. So if you're coming to the show, please don't wear anything that you care about. I love getting dressed up for an event. This is not that event.
So there'll be paint flying around.
We try not to let it fly. You know, don't be scared, Octagon Theater.
I was thinking of
try not to let it fly. No, we'll have tarps and everything and whatnot. But there will be paints.
So will it be you and Josh on stage together?
Yes, and the audience will be invited to at intervals of Josh's choosing to join him on stage to contribute to the painting.
Wow. It sounds like, things could get out of hand, but like it depends on the audience sort of understanding. Do they need quite a lot of direction with that?
So we do spend the first 5 to 10 minutes of the show like getting people into the headspace and assuring them that like you can't mess this up. There's no wrong or right here, other than, the things that are always wrong or right,
Okay. So Josh is doing the artwork for the first show, and then have you got someone else for the second show?
I do. So, Olivia Garelja is supposed... Sorry, I just made a very assertive smack with my hand. Olivia Garelja is supposed to be doing the second show. She had COVID last week, and so we're waiting on a negative test. But she has a special guest who is going to be joining her if she's able to do it, and if she's not able to do it, who will be taking over for her. So you'll just have to come and see who that is.
And is that a completely different medium?
No, that one's also going to be paint. Well, actually, it could be, depending on the person, it could be illustration.
Right.
So
is the idea that the art that's produced, is that sort of, is that ephemeral? Is it gone at the end of the show, or what do you do with the...
Oh, good question. So last year, I had the first Science for Sociopaths art exhibit at the Quarry Arts Center, which is something that I never thought that I'd be able to say, because I'm not a visual artist myself. But
the work that came out of the shows.
Eventually, we accumulated all these artworks, and we were like, what do we do with them? And we were like, I guess we put on a show. So we did an exhibition of artworks that were created at Science for Sociopaths shows, and I imagine we'll do the same.
You probably get asked this question all the time, but Science for Sociopaths to me is a bit of a misdirection. It's like, what's the kind of thinking behind that yeah. title.
Okay, so there's twofold, right? So the first is that I have a parent who's a sociopath. So it's a kind of a tongue-in-cheek, like, I was a science experiment for a sociopath. So there's that side of it, just right. dark, funny, haha for me.
and do the audience know this? Are they is that Some something people, you share with
they,
them? Or?
If they look into it, okay. they know. You know, right, right. they know. I write okay. openly about these things. Mm-hmm. And the second side of that is that a sociopath is someone who does not experience empathy and emotions the way that your average person does. They're motivated by things like, and because of that, they're motivated by things like sex and power and money and things like that, which is what causes them to sometimes do things that are what the average person would consider immoral, but I'm not going to get into to all of the, all yep. of that right yep. here, right now.
Yep.
but science for sociopaths. So how sociopaths get by in the day to day? Because you can't just operate openly as if you lack those feelings. Yeah. Is they learn to mimic them.
Uh-huh.
At the right and when to do that. And so what is a better education in emotion than music? So right. Science for Sociopaths being a deep dive into these emotions is actually a perfect education.
And potentially a therapeutic experience for people? Is that your intention?
My intention, it's a therapeutic experience for me. And right. so my intention, the reason that I mean, people love music for different reasons, but I'm a very word thematic, emotionally motivated person. Mm. And so for me, one of the things that has drawn me to music and kept me in it is that therapeutic quality.
Great. All right. Well, we better have another song. so you're going to play something else from this as yet unnamed song cycle?
Yes.
Great. Mm. What are you going to play?
This one's Curl. What is this one called? Little Girl Get Up? Yeah.
Okay. Great.
What is this one called? I know these. All right. Again, guitar. 1, 2, 3, 4. And the world keeps turning. And the world keeps turning. And the world keeps turning, 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 turning. And the world keeps turning. And the world keeps turning. And the world keeps turning, 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 turning. Little girl, get up and find your center. Little girl, get up and make your way. We're moving on. Little girl, nobody's got the answers. Little girl, it's not you. It's not you. Everybody knows that you do what you have to do. Everybody knows might not look the same for me and you. You wish everything was fair. Well, it's not what you're fighting for. If not you, if not you, if not you, if not. Little girl, get up and find your center. Little girl, get up and make your way. We're moving on. Little girl, nobody's got the answers. Little girl, it's not you, it's not you, it's not. Little girl, it's not you, it's not you, it's not. Little girl, it's not you, it's not you, it's not. You never really know it until devil's in the details and when it shows. You never really know it until you know. The devil's in the details and when it shows. You never devils in the details and when it shows.
Right, that was Maggie Cocco and Little Girl.
Little Girl, Get Up.
Get Up. And while you were singing that, I remember that I'd seen a photo of you on one of the Fringe, Fungale Fringe Facebook posts.
Yes.
It's quite distinctively you in the white dress.
Thank you. A lot of people think it's the other one, so really? You got it right, yeah.
No, definitely not. Mm. So how old were you in that picture?
I don't know. How old do I look?
About 3 or 4, maybe.
That sounds
how
right.
How come that's there? I mean, what was the kind of context for that?
So the context for that is that I kind of wanted to drive home. So I put in the description that it's about interpersonal and systemic abuse and resilience, and so I wanted to drive home that these are things that happen to everybody, but particularly children.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right.
And okay. So me, it happened to me. So right. It's a picture of me.
Right. And looking at that picture now, what do you think? I mean, especially in the context of that song seemed to sort of be addressed to maybe a little girl like that.
Yeah. I think I've been several people over the course of my life already. And I feel like, you know, you never really know it until you know the devil's in the details. Mm. You know, like that little girl didn't know that what she was experiencing was abuse.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
And so I'm guessing music has been an important part of healing, would you say?
I'd say it's been the only consistent
right.
in my life.
Right. And did that start at a very young age?
Yeah, I've always been musical. I've always known I wanted to be a musician. Mm. Like my entire life I've been like, I'm going to be a musician when I grow up. And it's really cute when you're a kid and people are like, oh, that's so cute. And then you get older and people go, oh, no. I start to get worried.
Yeah. What's your backup plan?
Right.
So you said earlier in the interview that you thought your music wasn't that fringy. And so you took it out on the road after that. Is that what you did?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the first song cycle. Is that the plan with this one?
That is the plan with this one. I really enjoyed the whole concept of letting other of experiencing my music through other people's filters and senses.
Mm.
And so I wanted to. It made it it made me feel less alone. Mm. You know, and I know that the audience feedback that I got was that I thought I was the only one kind
right.
of
so thing. That's feedback you're getting after the show when people come up to you and talk
yeah,
to you?
Yeah, yeah. And it can be very emotional. Mm. So there is, I do issue trigger warnings. It can be very emotional. But it is, at the end of it's always quite hopeful. I like to, actually, this new show very much rails against ignoring reality. At the expense of a comfortable lie, preferring a comfortable lie at the expense of reality.
Right.
Very much rails against that because I think that's where a lot of people fall through the cracks.
In terms of people who've experienced abuse, the curtain of silence around it that tends to get. That couldn't have happened, or you're lying, or that kind of stuff. Is that
yeah,
what you're talking about?
Yeah, or just we don't talk about it.
Ah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
We're just not going to talk about it. You know,
what's it like for you? If I'm not saying triggered, but if this brings things up for people, are you then at the end of the show? You then some sort of, you know, do you have to receive that from them, or how do you deal with that? Because that could be quite heavy.
It can be quite heavy. Mm. My poor partner. I'm often absolutely depleted.
Yeah.
After a show.
Yeah.
But it's worth it.
So, really?
Yeah, it is.
It's sustainable for you as a performer to...
Oh, I can't do it every night.
Right. So what sort of... If you take it out on the road, what sort of venues or what sort of...
Definitely alternative venues. I don't really market this toward your typical music venues. And I still make my living as a musician. So I do all of that. You know, I do the cover bands and I do the music that people want to hear in bars and I do all of that. But this is This is something different. I don't even market it towards those venues. It's not something you can just throw at someone in a bar when they're going out for a ride on the town.
they have to know what they're coming to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So this is more theaters or alternative venues. I've had really good luck with various art scenes and art galleries and reaching out and talking about the show and the art component.
Yeah.
And getting those crowds to come and experience things. And it's it hits home frequently because a lot of people turn to art for self-care.
Sure. So you've been in New Zealand nearly 3 years.
Mm.
And I'm guessing that, and at some point this might be something you want to take out of New Zealand?
Yeah, I'd love to when I can.
Mm. So, and would that be back to the States, or what would you like
I'd
to do?
I'd actually like to take it to Australia first, but I can't actually leave until I get my next visa. So I'm in a perpetually rolling over holiday working visa situation.
Right.
Which is cool, because it's cool in a sense. Well, it's cool that I'm able to stay.
Mm.
It's also cool that I've been put in a situation where I can't actually take permanent work, and so it's freed me up quite a bit to develop this project.
Right.
So that's been great. And then, of course, there's all the limitations that you can imagine that come with that. So I don't qualify for any funding from here or in the States for any of the work that I'm doing. So I do have a Patreon, which is people subscribe. All of my work is pay what you can.
Mm-hmm.
Performances, lessons, everything.
Including these two shows?
Including these two shows.
Right.
So I give a recommended amount based on what I need to make back to cover costs.
Sure.
But I don't want the people who would most benefit from any of my work to not be able to access it because of money.
Right.
I would have been that person at one point.
Sure. Who else is doing this kind of stuff? Are there other people out there, other artists doing this kind of thing? Like this, doing song cycles about these sorts of things? Or like, who are your kind of, I guess I'm asking, who are your influences, or who are your kind of, you know?
I don't know. There probably are tons of people doing this, like, or something very similar to it right now, but I don't know who they are.
Okay. Well, who are you listening to at the moment?
I actually, because of the nature of my, the way that I relate to music, I can become very emotional when I listen to music, so I don't, I have to be like my audiences. Like, I have to know that I'm going to listen to something.
Wow.
And listen to it. If I'm listening to music just for the sake of listening to music, it's going to be instrumental, and usually instrumental jazz.
Oh.
If it's vocal, I'll be focused too much. Yeah, I can't have anything on in the background or anything like that.
So if you're going to sit down and listen to something like that, which demands your full kind of, what would you...
Right now I'm listening to Shayna Lang. Shayna Grace. And she's a singer-songwriter from West Auckland who just moved to Whangarei. And I heard her for the first time at the Fringe Festival at What the Folk, and bought both of her CDs, and they're phenomenal. Just very kind of similar to what I do in terms of the deep dive into the emotions and the thoughts and the feelings and the self-development, but a very different stylistically.
Shayna Grace.
Mm-hmm.
Name is right. She's recently moved to Whangarei.
Yeah, wow. She's local. Comes here.
Great. Is she performing on her own at the Fringe, or is she...
Yeah, she performed with What the Folk.
Yep.
At the beginning of the festival.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, we better wrap this up. We've got time for one more song. So have you got another one you can share with us?
I do. I'm going to do one that's was rejected from both song cycles so far. But it is...
On what basis?
On what basis? Just that it was just tangential enough from the storyline to not be necessary.
Right.
But I do love the song, and it is a sing-along, so if anybody... anybody at home wants to... Yeah,
cool. What's it called?
What is it called? The Illusion. Yeah, sorry, my brain.
Cool.
I'll sing you a song, we'll make a toast, send off the ones we love the most.
spots more than this. I couldn't impart more than the bliss of a well-spun confusion. La 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 la.
This is the part that you sing.
La 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 la.
Nice.
Given your act, it should go well. Nobody thinks to look in hell for the ones for whom they're rooting. And every night I lie awake, fleshing out all of the mistakes I make, attribute them to you. La la.
Maggie Cocco with Illusion. Hopefully Mickey and I groaning along in the background didn't completely spoil it. That was great. I really enjoyed that. I was thinking while you were singing, for me, a performer that I love is someone who sings their heart out.
Mm.
And I feel like you really sing your heart out.
Thank you.
And yeah, it's emotional. It's very sort of, it's powerful. And you've got a beautiful voice. How would you describe, like, what, in sort of technical terms, what is your voice, musical terms?
Oh,
I
suppose technically I'm a lyric soprano, but
right.
So I did study classically, but I haven't done any of that. Basically, I graduated and was like, I'm gonna sing my own music, and I'm gonna sing in bars and stuff like that. And so I started singing in cover bands and doing like weddings and corporate events and casinos and stuff like that. And I got to travel all over the States and do a lot of really get into places. This is the thing about music, is I've been able to see places and meet people that I would never have the opportunity to otherwise. It's been really, really amazing. But in the process of doing that, I got away from myself a little bit. I became really focused on playing what other people wanted me to sing. And so this is... been really good because it's been a return to me and the reason I got into music in the first place.
Great. And that's happened since you've been here in New Zealand?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Awesome. All right. Well, it's been great to have you in. Thanks for coming. The shows are at 6:30 p.m. tomorrow, Thursday the 13th of October at the Octagon Theatre, and Friday the 14th of October, 8 p.m. Tickets are $30 or pay what you can. And it's a 1-hour show. And I hope having Maggie here has helped you get a sense of what the show's about. And there's there's a lot to it, really, actually, once you get into it. It's not just a gig. It's a lot more than that.
Yeah.
And the artists on Thursday night will be Josh Kiwi-Kiwi on stage with Maggie, and then on Friday, hopefully, Olivia Gorelja, who'll both be doing some painting. And there's more information on the Fringe Facebook page about the show, and you've also got your own website, have you got
I've got a website, I'm on the social medias, I've got a Patreon, I got all the things.
Okay, you can't not find out what you need to know. Okay, great. Thanks for coming in. I'll put the playlist back on and be back in a little while. Thanks for coming in, Maggie, and thanks for technical support, Mickey.
Thanks for having us.
Give a quick plug, final plug to to The Happy Prince, which starts in 40 minutes at the Octagon Theatre. I haven't even checked if there are still tickets available, but I will. And I thought I'd play back the interview that Matt did with Hayley and some of the cast members whose names I don't quite remember. I know one of them was Frankie. They came into the studio on the 4th of October, about a week ago, and had a chat with Matt, so I thought I'd just play that to give you an idea about what that show is about. It starts at the Octagon Theatre at 11 o'clock, and there's also a performance at 2 o'clock today, 2 p.m., and tomorrow there's an 11 a.m. performance and a 2 p.m. performance, and I think that is their season. So here we go with Matt's interview with Hayley and the cast of Happy Prince.
Yeah. And I'm joined by a crew from Northern Youth Theatre, Frankie, Rose and Ella. Hi. And in the background, who was just telling them not to swear on the radio, is Hayley Douglas, the marvellous Company of Giants alumni and local genius. So you guys are here because we're going to have a quick kōrero about The Happy Prince.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And you guys are all appearing in it?
Yeah.
Yep.
So that is going to be on or start.
Okay, I don't know why I'm having trouble with that. Let me try a different plug. Just bear with me 1 second.
11 a.m. and 2 p.m. Now I'm both at the Octagon, right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So the Octagon is a lovely little intimate venue. You guys, it's quite a big piece, eh? Is it?
Well, yeah, it's like 45 minutes long, roughly.
Yeah, I was thinking more of the number of performers. And is it? Yeah. Have you done a run at the Octagon yet?
Not at the Octagon. Okay. I don't think we don't really get one.
Yeah. You don't get one, yeah.
Yeah, we don't get a run.
No, okay,
but
no time for that.
We've done like season one.
Yeah, which you did here. Yep. A little bit bigger than you.
Tiny little bigger.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like a lot of characters in there. Yeah. Three of us. But
so it's going to be very intimate and possibly sweaty. So talk to me a bit about Happy Prince.
Oh, no.
I'm
not the Happy Prince expert. Okay. The Happy Prince is originally written by Oscar Wilde.
Yeah.
And then we've basically taken that story and turned it into a show.
Devised it into a show.
A new show. So both the our story has changed a little bit from the original, but we tried to link some parts together and use some of the same lines and things like that.
Yep. So if you know the Happy Prince, you will know this.
Yeah.
This story.
And there's some different Oscar Wilde play references in it too.
The Selfish Giant.
Right.
Story
okay.
Reference.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And tell me about the devising process. I mean, you guys, that's kind of the NYT cope-up, right? I mean, that's, you devise theatre, which is why it's such an extraordinary company. And you're all experienced in that process? You've done it plenty of times?
Yeah.
And so how was it with this one? I know you've got a framework of a story with the Happy Prince, but...
It was, so we spent, like, most of term two devising it.
Yeah.
And we didn't actually have a complete play until, like...
A couple of days before.
Which is kind of hairy, isn't it? I mean, it's a nervous energy that drives you on.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, though. And, I mean, we did a lot of fun things, and there was a lot that we did, and we were like, wow, that's really cool, but then we didn't end up including it. And then there's some stuff that we added in, like, last minute.
And I suppose, too, as kind of each season evolves, it's different from the last one in some ways. You know, it's never... Mm-hmm. Never a static piece.
No, it's
definitely evolved.
Yeah, the first season.
Much different.
Yeah, the first season we didn't have a script. Most of it was improv, kind of. Like, we had the specific points and lines that we were meant to be saying along those lines, but it was mostly just like.
Changed every night.
Yeah,
roughly. It was just quite rough. Mm. But now we've got an actual script. We've written the script. And And because we're at the Octagon, it's obviously a lot smaller, so we've changed our
set quite
a bit. So there's a few things like that.
Yep.
We only have the stage dimensions to work with, so...
Right.
Yeah.
So you guys, you're running that down at your new space in Hihiawa?
Yeah. Marked it off with masking tape.
And don't go outside the lines.
Yeah.
I feel like, even though Hayley said she doesn't want to talk... So Hayley, your role in this, are you the director of this one?
I'm potentially kind of the director. I'm more that I'm producing it as NYT.
Right.
Where we're producing it. Georgia May, who directed the first one, is definitely credited as the director because these guys did create it with Georgia.
Yep.
I guess we're just doing a little bit of fine tuning at this point.
Yep.
So I would not say I'm a director, but definitely kind of doing some little smoothing out of some bits.
And because it's you, there are going to be extraordinary costumes.
Yes.
Already are.
First season, the costumes are very cool.
They are.
Yeah.
They're beautiful. You're a genius. Stop it. So have the costumes changed at all, or that's same?
No, not really, no.
Yep.
No, the costumes haven't changed because they're already, like,
perfect.
Yeah,
they're perfect already. You're a charmer. You're a pro.
Yeah. And so they also, like, the costumes need to be very easy to get in and out of. So most of them are just, like, one piece that we can put in, take on and off to change between characters.
Yep.
Yeah, we have the basic costume, which is just cardboard colours, I guess, to match with the set.
Very neutral beige colours.
Yeah, then we just have the cloak or crown or something just to...
Yeah. I think the Happy Prince is probably the most complicated costume because it's got the cloak and then the big, it's like a head about this high.
Okay.
Well, yeah. quite high above your head. And
is when you're walking around
yeah.
for a day.
And Frankie had the honour of wearing it all day throughout some promotion and the parade that was on yesterday. Yeah. Not yesterday.
The Hearty Mahatis.
The Hearty Mahatis, right. Yeah.
Yep, nice. Yeah. That was a shame about the weather, wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah. So is it, you guys don't always remount productions, eh? So this is... You know, pretty cool that it's come back again. It's a sign, obviously, the first season went really well.
Yeah.
After we got the show finished, yeah.
Yeah, this is Company of Giants. In the nicest possible way. do you hope that it will have potentially another season after this? Is it one that...
Probably not.
No, okay. I think after the season this will be...
Yeah, this will be the last one.
Right.
I probably should speak to that. As NYT, because it was never going to have a second season.
Yep.
And then it was something that Georgia and I were talking about, going like, well, Fringe is coming up and it would be nice to do something for NYT as part of Fringe.
Yep.
And then Hayley Clark, the manager at NYT, said, she was just like, well, why don't we, as a learning opportunity and it's just a cool opportunity for our cast to do it as a profit share. So it's so that, I guess, our young people get an experience of what it's like to, I guess, produce the show as yep. well, and maybe like earn some money from doing something that they enjoy doing, and that there is a potential in the future to go into the performing arts as a career.
Oh, that's really cool. So how have you guys found that process, taking on more of that kind of production work? That...
Well, I think we're really lucky that we get to do it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's quite, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think NYT definitely makes it easy, like very fun, relaxed and easy, which is good.
We have a space. We don't have to, you know, organise all of that.
Yeah.
Props, costumes.
Yeah.
And are any of you thinking about, okay, I'm on the pathway now, I want to keep going with this, you know, I'll kind of toy for Cardies in the future, or...
Yeah, I would like to, but I'm also going to be too young once I leave school, so I have to take a gap year and do something in between, but yeah.
Yeah, there are people who've gone straight from school, aren't they? I mean, Summer Millett from here, it's tough, isn't it?
And they don't encourage it. I'll be too young, I'll be 17, okay, right. And they don't like people who are 17.
yeah. But it's definitely, you guys feel like you're on the pathway? This is...
Yeah.
I think so.
I think that's amazing, and you know, for you guys as kind of the NYT managers to be able to provide that experience, because it's hard, all that stuff, eh? Like promo and you know, trying to dredge up ticket sales and how we're going to pay for things.
Yeah.
And interesting, you say profit share because I've never heard of profit happening with a theatre before.
Well, I mean, you know, profit share may be $40 four ways, but you know.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Okay, so just repeating that again. So from next Wednesday, 12th of October, 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. shows, both at the Octagon, and then obviously Thursday, the next day, 13th of October, 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. both at the Octagon. Tickets are $15 and $10 concession. It's a 40-minute piece, and totally kid friendly, obviously.
Yeah.
My 3-year-old seen it and gave it a very good review. So we'll be there again. I think actually I'm reviewing it too for Theatre Review. So don't worry, it's in the bag. Great. Okay. Well, hey, thanks so much for coming in, you guys, and please do get out and support local theatre, especially by our rangatahi. So we want to get really good, strong audiences. You can go onto the Fringe website, whangarefringe.co.nz, look up the Happy Prince, go to Event Finder, get yourselves a ticket, and school holidays, so there are no excuses. Okay, guys, thank you very much. Thank you, Hayley.
Welcome back to Fringe Radio. I'm Damien, and that was the cast of The Happy Prince, Hayley Douglas, and the cast of The Happy Prince, which starts at the Octagon Theatre at 11 o'clock. And I don't have a sound engineer in the studio, so I'm making it up as I go along with the tech. Hopefully I'm on the line with Andy Sondolini. Are you there, Andy?
Yeah, I am, Damien. How are you?
Hi, good to talk to you. Andy's show is Comedic Lube Wrestling, which is taking place tonight at 8 p.m. at the Butter Factory. And this is one of those show, well, even just the name. Does the name tell us everything we need to know, Andy?
Yeah, title. With a comedic twist. So my first time emceeing for and now my first time directing. So I'm kind of going to have a great time. And I've got about 4 minutes to work. So it's a good time.
Andy, the line's not great. I'm just wondering if you've got a decent signal, or is there somewhere you can go and stand where we can get a better signal, because it's not great. You're in Dargaville.
Is this any better at all?
Yeah, that's slightly better. You're in Dargaville, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm actually out in the middle of a Planetari at the moment. So reception's patchy at best.
Okay.
Unfortunately,
that's actually a lot better. So if you can stay where you are now, that will be awesome. Okay, so can we start again? Sorry, because I don't think that was intelligible what you just said. Just tell us again about the title and the concept of the show.
Yeah, so it's what it says on the name is comedic blue wrestling. So I've got about 200 liters worth of blue, and it's my first time emceeing and hosting a show, and it's our ref's first time reffing. And so we thought we'd just have a bit of a laugh and have some lighthearted, chaotic fun for the night.
Right. Did you say 200 litres of lube?
Give or take. It's in powdered form, but it makes about 200 litres worth of lube, yeah.
Right, so you can buy powdered lube and then mix it up yourself.
Yeah, so one of the great things about being up in Northland is there's lots of farmers about, so I was able to have a chat with them about what kind of obstetrics lube they preferred. And I got put on to what is internationally renowned as... high quality obstetrics lubricant is the polite way I'll phrase that.
So what's the connection with farmers? Are we talking about when farmers do cow exams, they use this stuff?
Yeah, cow exam, horse exams. It's the similar kind of stuff that's used for that.
Right.
It's also safe for humans too, so it's hypoallergenic.
So it's not the stuff that we buy from the adult toy megastore or places like that. It's a more kind of an industrial kind of product. Is that right?
Not industrial. Maybe industrial. It's higher quality is the way I would phrase this.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the polite way I can say things on air. If you come along tonight, there's a bit more of a story behind it that you'll get to see and hear all about, which is quite entertaining.
I see. So you share that sort of information with the audience. You're sort of letting them know about the origins of your lube. What else do you talk to them? Is there sort of a setup before the show, or like how do you kind of introduce it?
Well, I mean, if they're coming along to lube wrestling, I'm hoping they understand what the premise is from there. But yeah, basically it starts off with us welcoming everyone in, talking a little bit about why we're doing lube wrestling, because it's a great way of breaking down social norms about bodies and making it easier for everybody to get a good time in and have an understanding about touch and the importance of lube in our lives.
Right.
And then in between all of the different wrestling rounds, we've got about 14 wrestlers signed up. There's a myriad of interesting fun facts about the human body, about lube, and just general entertaining value about the wrestlers themselves.
Great.
We've got people from all over the world, quite literally, joining us tonight to be wrestling for us.
Are they all volunteers, or are there some people who are kind of travelling with the show?
So it's the first and only time we've done this in Whangarei. If it goes well, fingers crossed it won't be the last. but it's actually everybody has signed up as a volunteer, but thankfully, ticket sales are going well, so I'm actually passing a lot of that money across back into our performers.
Awesome.
Because they are the ones brave enough to get up on stage and have a go at this.
Yeah. So it sounds, from what you've described so far, it's a sex-positive show. Would that be a correct sort of...
That's a very good way of phrasing it, yeah. A sex-positive show.
Right, so you're sort of...
Body positivity too.
Right, so we're not going to see necessarily the most beautiful, lithe, tanned bodies writhing around. It's not a sex show, it's more of a...
No.
Okay. Right, because I guess that's...
It's not a sex show, it definitely is, that's the comedic side of it. None of these people are professionals. We've got one person who has done some form of lube or jelly wrestling before coming along for the night, but everybody else is a complete noob, and just thought, you know what, I want to play in a kiddie's pool full of lube. That sounds like a good way to spend my Wednesday evening.
Yeah, and the person I know who signed up is exactly the kind of person who would dive into that literally and metaphorically. So how long is the show? How long do you run for?
We're starting, doors open at 8 p.m. Yep. And it looks like we're going till about 10:30, but we've got 7 rounds of wrestlers, so it might go a little bit later. It really depends on how quick there are to be able to pin each other down or take a tag or remove a shirt.
I see. So I noticed that it's 18 plus, so I'm guessing there might be some, you know, some nakedness involved or some, you know, some body, you know, we'll be able to, there'll be plenty to see in terms of, you know, we're not wearing, they're not wearing costumes or things like that. What will the participants be wearing actually?
So participants are encouraged to be wearing costumes. They're out now shopping and I'm getting a hilarious range of photos coming up on my Facebook Messenger.
Are they shopping for swimwear or are they shopping for activewear or what are they?
I can't give away too much there, Damien. Some people are looking for a variety of things. I can confirm there probably will be a few slips of different nips and tips. But hopefully the intention is that people will be wearing at least a layer of clothing.
Right.
If that stays on the whole time, that's up to them and their wrestling partner.
Right. So they're thrashing around in this lube wrestling. I mean, is you said it's... what's the word, hypoallergenic and sort of it's medically safe. So if it gets in their eyes and nodes and mouths, it's not, I've never really thought about, you know, lube other than for what it's usually used for. So is that all okay?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely should be fine for all of that stuff. Again, hypoallergenic, we've already done patch tests on most of the wrestlers and no one's broken out in a rash. So going in the right direction.
Great.
And so it should be, it is safe to consume as well or less encouraged.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And so you mix it up in a giant inflatable paddling pool, is that what you said? Like a kid's paddling pool?
Basically, yeah, basically. Add water and a whisk and have a good time.
I had a quick look at the weather forecast and the high today is 19 degrees and the low is 12. So I'm wondering, you know, does it need to be warm to be enjoyable for the people or how, what's the temperature of the lube?
The lube is room temperature, but yeah. I'm assuming with more friction and the longer it goes on, the warmer the cave at the Butter Factory is going to get, the warmer the lube's going to get too.
Yeah.
So it might become slightly lukewarm, I'm not sure.
Right.
But we'll have to have a running commentary on temperature across the night.
That sounds, yeah.
And that way you can find out and be sure that it is, nobody's going to be, you know, having anything become too cold.
Okay, that's good to know. And then what happens after when they get out? Do you hose them down or like what... How do you clean them up?
So it's water-based, but salt is actually the best way to get it off. So there is a discussion going on around with some of the wrestlers about heading down to one of the beaches after the show to have a bit of a swim and to rinse off. So salt water actually gets it clean completely.
Oh, that's interesting.
But you can just go have a shower.
Okay.
So it comes off really easily.
Right.
The concern is getting out of the pool, but I have a... monolithic pile of towels in my car. And hopefully that means that they're not going to fall out of the pool. They'll be able to step.
Right. Okay.
And then dry themselves off. I have encouraged them to bring a change of clothes, but you know what? You might get to continue seeing what the show's all about after they've done their wrestling match. Again, it's up to the participant.
I see. It sounds sounds fascinating. How did you get into this? Like, what's your sort of history as a... Well, how would you describe yourself? Are you the producer? Are you the director? Are you the... What are you?
Chaos initiator?
Oh.
I think is how I'm going to phrase that.
Right.
It came up as a joke between friends wanting to do some sex-positive kind of hilarious acts. And then we were like, well, how do we get people there? And then we started being like, lube wrestling, obviously, is the answer.
Yeah.
And... as a result, we ended up booking in a lube wrestling show. It started off as a joke, and now we're selling tickets, and people are expecting something from us. So I've got to go and write all of the jokes that I need to tell tonight, actually.
Oh, seriously? You're going to be telling jokes as well?
Well, that's the comedic part.
I see.
Because if all else fails, it's still lube wrestling.
Right. You mean if the jokes fail or...
Yeah, if the jokes fail.
Okay, great. So I see that's the comedic... I mean, it sounds pretty comedic to people wrestling in some very slippery, you know, medium. What's the kind of... Do you win or is it just participation? What's the... How do you win?
So the winner just basically gets bragging rights over their partner.
And who's adjudicating?
Three different... We have Amber from Amber's Kitchen. She is our ref for the night.
Right.
She has refed mud wrestling before, so she's got some criteria and skill set.
Right.
But a very low understanding of what the rules of wrestling are really about. So anyone who has a strong understanding of wrestling, if you want to come along tonight and heckle us and tell us when we get it wrong, hell yeah.
Okay.
You might even be able to help us out with filling up the rest of the pool.
Awesome.
But it's a very loose understanding.
Yeah, that's what it says in your description. And it sounds very sort of tongue-in-cheek and playful, not terribly serious, obviously. And yeah, the elements, the sort of, I'm guessing the people who, the local people who are wrestling will have their kind of an entourage of people, you know, cheerleading them on.
You know what? No one's actually spoken to me about pom-poms yet, but I feel like that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I think we should be able to get some cheerleaders down for some of our participants for sure.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds great. All right. So just, it's tonight at the Butter Factory in the Cave, 8 p.m. And it's $30 full price, $25 concession. It's a two-hour show. I guess it's just got to be experienced. You know, there's not talking about it. It's probably quite limited. I mean, my imagination has gone off thinking about it. But it's definitely when I saw that coming to the Fringe, I thought that's a classic Fringe. You know, it's perfect. Like that kind of event is made for the Fringe. Have you done other Fringe festivals?
No, I haven't done any Fringe festivals. This is my first time getting up on stage and doing anything like this.
This is literally the first time you've ever done it.
Yeah, first time we've ever done anything like this.
Wow.
So if it goes well, we'll come back. And if it doesn't, everyone's got a good story.
All right. Well, it's been great talking to you, Andy. Thanks so much for joining us. And I'm glad to hear that you've sold some tickets. And I hope this little promotion helps to sell some more. You know, good on the Butter Factory for hosting an event like this. And I hope the cleanup's not too much of a nightmare.
I've got my mop and bucket ready. Hopefully see you there tonight, Damien.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, Andy. Good to talk to you.
See you later. Bye.
Bye.
Once I could laugh with it.
Kia ora, welcome back to Fringe Radio. I'm Damien. It's 10:50, and if you are out for something to do after something to do today, the first performance of The Happy Prince starts in 10 minutes at the Octagon Theatre if you're in the area. There's also a show at 2 p.m. And the Octagon Theatre is at 13 Aubrey Street, which is just off Bank Street, so not far from the CBD. If you haven't been there before, lovely little theatre, very intimate, and I'm looking forward to catching the show later on. The Open Virtual Studio is taking place today, starting at 2 p.m., and Jared Taylor was in earlier to tell us about that. If you're interested, it's best to go to their website, which is creative. The web address is creativetechnorthland, all one word, .co.nz. And there's information about the Open Virtual Studio on there. It says, are you an artist or performer or just interested in what the metaverse is about? If so, this workshop is for you. Here's your chance to take a deep dive down the VR rabbit hole. And for me, that was a really interesting interview. Introduced me to some, you know, I'd sort of heard of Web 3 or Web version 3 and the metaverse and things like that. But I guess you hear them enough times and then you actually start to work out what it means. And they'll be having that conversation, trying to make it accessible for people like me, perhaps, who aren't up to speed with everything. So that's at 2, and it goes for 3 hours till 5 o'clock. And there's three different parts to it, so you don't have to participate in the whole thing. It finishes with a hangout with a bunch of tech people in another reality. It all looks very cool. And the second part is a virtual world training lab from 3:30 till 4:30. And the first part is from 2 till 3:30, an introductory workshop for creatives. So that's great. Sounds really interesting. The Imaginarium is also on today, kicking off at 3:33. And then at 6 p.m. tonight at Fringe After Dark, Soy Boys have their first show. And I'll be talking to them tomorrow on the show. They're traveling up this afternoon, so they are not available for an interview today, unfortunately. The description of their show goes like this: young, dumb, and full of soy. Oren Ruane Prattley, Wellington Comedy Quest winner 2021, and Finn McLaughlin, Wellington Comedy Quest finalist 2022, have played to crowds all across the country and have come to perform their best hour of stand-up comedy. We'll raise your spirits and your estrogen levels. And it says free milk. So that's an interesting way to sell a show. Young, dumb, and full of soy. They are from Wellington, so I guess, you know, we should be ready for pretty much anything. So they're at Fringe After Dark tonight at 6, and then at 116 at 6:30 is the final performance of Like Sex, which is a great play by Nathan Joe, just over an hour long, and it's a cast of 7, and the format of the play is that there are 2 characters on per scene, so 7 scenes. So each character is... The first 2 characters, one character stays on, and then it's called a daisy chain format. So there's you're sort of following a group of characters, and there are connections between them all. And it's funny, and it's sad, and I think it's quite moving. I still feel moved by it, even though I've seen it quite a few times, because I'm also the director of that play. And I think it's a great cast. It's a local group of young people, 18 to 22-year-olds. And I think it's a great play. It's well written. The dialogue's really sharp and snappy and relevant. And the cast liked it from the beginning because they felt that it was quite real and relevant and talked about their experience of not just sex, but relationships and trying to connect and trying to work out your own, what you know, in terms of sexuality and what you are and what you're into. And talking to Andy Sondolini about comedic lube wrestling, you know, there's been a lot of sex positive shows and events in the Fringe, starting with Miss Jojo Bellini's bondage show earlier on in the festival, and comedic lube wrestling. You might think it sounds a bit, I don't know, a bit like a sex show, but actually it's not. It's a sex positive show celebrating the body and talking about sex and lube and things like that. Sounds fascinating. So Like Sex is also, I think, sex positive in the sense that hopefully it provokes conversations about sex and particularly about consent. which is even in our relatively enlightened times still a difficult thing for people to get their heads around and to even have honest conversations about sex. So we've still got some tickets to sell. So if you haven't seen Like Sex, come along tonight. Buy your tickets online first. Go to the Fringe website, fangadayfringe.co.nz, and go to What's On, and then type in Like Sex to the search bar, and it will take you to the Event Finder page. And tickets are very reasonable, $10 concession and $15 full price. There's a Morris dancing workshop at 7 p.m., which is happening at Just Thrive, which is the dance studio down on John Street, 50 John Street. They've been great, really supportive of the Fringe, and it's a lovely space, nice dance space. So that's at 7 p.m. It's free, 2 hours long. You've got to be careful because apparently Morris dancing is quite addictive, according to the people who tried to recruit me. And it's very positive, celebratory, and they seem to love it. So give it a go if you feel like a dance. At 7:30 p.m., Laura Yakis returns with her Misanthropy show. Misanthropy, a pageant for the people of Earth. Laura is an anthropologist and an activist, and therefore she often feels misanthropic. Misanthropy is her second musical comedy show, a pageant of relatable hate to soothe the souls of folks who also hate being human sometimes. And it's not as... It sounds maybe a little bit negative, but it's really not. I think it's really, again, to provoke a conversation. It's $15 or $10, like most other Fringe events. It's tonight at 7:30 p.m. at Fringe After Dark. Then at 8 p.m. after Like Sex here at 116 is Alone. And I was hoping to have a chat with Kat from Alone, but they let me know that they have been delayed leaving Auckland, so won't be here in time to do today's show, but I'm hoping they'll be able to come in tomorrow to have a chat with us about Alone, and I'm looking forward very much to seeing the show. And then at 8 p.m. there is Comedic Lube Wrestling. Hopefully you caught that interview with Andy Sondolini just now. Hopefully the phone line was okay, that you could hear what we were talking about. And it sounds fascinating. Okay, let's try a bit of Baroque pop, since I threatened to play some of that earlier, and now I'm actually going to try and play it again. This is Go or Go Ahead by Rufus Wainwright. I think that's known as dead air. I can't understand why that's not working, but it's probably just a loose connection or something. These things do happen. Oh, I know. Sometimes you have to unplug the computer. That's it. That might be the fix. Let's try it one more time.
Thank you for this bitter knowledge. Guardian angels who left me stranded. It was worth it, feeling abandoned. Makes one harden, but what has happened? You got me writing lyrics on postcards, then in the evenings looking at stars. But the brightest of the planets is Mars. What has happened to love?
Is Rufus Wainwright, Go or Go Ahead, from his album Want One. Okay, so I'm going to play tomorrow. I'm going to play some interviews from earlier in the Fringe, and tomorrow Barrier Ninja opens at 12. First show's at 12 o'clock, and it is at 116. So there's a show tomorrow at midday and tomorrow at 6 p.m. and then one at 5:30 p.m. on Friday. $20, 1 hour. And Julie Edwards spoke to me earlier in the week about that show. And here goes.
Kia ora anō, that was the meeting place by the Last Shadow Puppets, which is on my Baroque Pop with Indie Sensibilities playlist, which, of course, Spotify's got a playlist for every obsession. And so that's what I'm playing tracks off this morning. Some surprising things on there that I didn't know were Baroque Pop, but it's a whole new genre to explore. And some very familiar ones, bands like the Fleet Foxes and Nick Drake. So very happy with that. Okay, so I've got Julie Davis here in the studio with
Edwards.
Me.
Edwards.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Julie it's Davis. Okay, don't
we? Julie Edwards. I don't know where the Davis came from. Julie's part of Barrier Ninja, which is actually not performing at Fringe till the last week. So Thursday, the 13th of October, there's two shows here at 116, one at 12 and one at 6 p.m., and then on Friday, the 14th of October, there's a show from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m., and that's a New Zealand Sign Language interpreted show. So three opportunities to see it, and the show's an hour long?
Yep.
Great. And so Julie was telling me that she's just the it's a solo show, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about how the show came to be and how long you've been... Because one of the things I found out about it was it's been performed to medical students at
yeah, Anna. Well, Fran Kiwine, who's Tainui Manipoto,
mm-hmm.
she was doing her Master's of Arts at Otago, and mm. she used it as her thesis, exploring the interface between wellness and the arts.
Right.
And so she also lectured at the Dunedin School of Medicine, Māori, the Hui process, Māori medicine.
Ah.
Yeah, so she... interviewed 9 recipients about their professional, personal experiences of hauora and the barriers that they face.
Nine recipients?
People. I know.
You don't say patient? Are we?
No, because the professional and personal experiences, consultants to health workers.
Oh, I see. So not just...
hauora Māori, sorts of...
Not just tangata whaiora?
Kau.
Oh, okay, right. Okay, so it's a range of voices of people... involved in hauora generally.
That's right. So she got a kind of a rounded, point of view of the challenges, and there are challenges.
Mm.
And then videoed them, and then with their, blessing,
mm.
I watched and studied all the videos and the mannerisms and the vocal intonations.
So did she bring you in as the performer like that? Mm-hmm. So she was doing the
research? She was doing it first. She did it... for the fifth year medical students,
right,
and then there's kōrero around it, so it just is a way to help engage their hearts and minds and get them really thinking about their future abilities to consult people who don't want to use the system, and it's an education resource,
right.
Yeah,
yeah, and Verbatim Theatre seems to lend itself to doing that quite well.
It did for, it does. It's used in prisons. It's used in a lot of, drama therapy and all sorts. But it hadn't been on its feet in a theatre yet. So So we knew it worked in that space.
Where did you do it? Like, where did you perform?
When I first did it, I did it, I took it into the theatre. So I took it to Kiamo in Wellington.
Right.
2019, was it 18?
Right.
Before COVID. And and it stood up really well in a theatre space around our kaupapa, our theatre marae kaupapa, which is, there's a lot of protection and because these people are real. And and then there's always a kōrero afterwards, a ngā kōrero with the
audience.
What it evokes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's used as a discussion.
So when you discuss it, it's sort of you can take it into the realm of people, audience's own experiences, or do you tend to discuss what's gone on in the show, or both, or
really, if the show works, people want to talk about their experiences, not about the technique of verbatim, which is really interesting in itself because there's all sorts of verbatim, so this is like a really stripped back version of every nuance, every word for word, every kind of
gesture,
every gesture as much as possible.
So you try to, and that's my understanding, because we had the Keezer and the Margarine here recently.
Yeah, yeah, which I did the first tour of.
Oh, yeah. I see, right.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, so similar to Cindy's, to the Keys.
Yeah.
But really it's just one person, neutral, no aids, nothing else.
Oh, no costume changes?
Absolutely not.
No set?
No. Well, oh. Yeah, one... In a sense, it's some symbolic. Yeah, there's always a set because you have to be there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, yeah, there's a set. Yeah.
So in terms of the content of the show, is you as a single performer there, and are you sort of telling the stories sort of sequentially, or are you kind of weaving them?
The way we've edited it is weaving around themes, you know, whakawhanaungatanga, you know, all sorts of the tikanga and whether it suits... how it doesn't suit certain environments and,
right,
you know, like there's one beautiful person, whānau, of a husband, a wife and their daughter who doesn't say anything,
right,
but she's there. And we know she's there because, I play her silently, but he was having kidney transplants, so he's on dialysis, and it was their story, sort of the centre, kind of
is the centre of the
heart
piece?
Of this piece, really.
Right.
Yeah.
So how do we know, as audience, do you signal to us when you're changing character or changing story?
I introduce them at the beginning. Yep. I introduce aids that might help you, you know, and voices that, you know. And we also have projection of the themes around the scenes, I guess.
So we'd see a word like whakawhanaungatanga on the screen and then we'd know that's where. Okay, right.
Yeah.
So initially it was performed to two medical students?
Yeah.
And was that in like a lecture theatre or like...
At Otago School of Medicine.
Right.
Yeah, for 5 years, four years.
Ah.
Yeah.
So it was sort of part of the, I guess, the curriculum or the learning, the teaching.
Yeah. And then we took it to Auckland Live last year. We tried to take it a few times, to Matariki. And we accessed a whole lot of GPs to those shows and they... responded like beyond words. They could see that it needed to be something that was in boardrooms in health, you know, at conferences or
what sort of things surprised you about them?
That they have no resource in professional development to help provoke or create professional development, workshopping around how we overcome these barriers for people and get them to the doctor,
sort of
get them into the
systemic
system
barriers to them coming in.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of those barriers? Like what I can imagine, but
there's from one of the people that I play, you know, there's a nurse who is always, she calls herself the barrier ninja, which is where she's always having to connect the, you know, systemic barriers like appointment times that hinder people coming in from out of town, whānau, not, you know, being so whakamā to get the elders in there. And because it's not our system. How to integrate, how to change the system, really. Māori don't need to change.
No, I mean, it's a big kōrero going on at the moment, isn't it? You know, with Oranga Tamariki and all these sort of realisations. I don't know how, I can't imagine how easy it's going to be or difficult to turn Oranga Tamariki into something that is more...
Normal. Yeah, that is the system. Because the system doesn't work, that's got to be. It's got to be mainstream.
So this is a problem everywhere, presumably. It's not just, you know, it's a problem for tangata whai ora everywhere.
I think internationally.
Right.
For indigenous culture.
Yeah.
For, you know, I mean, Australia's, hello.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So Barrier Ninja is that name came out of this nurse who considers herself, so Barrier Ninja as in someone who demolishes barriers. Okay, so how does she...
Yeah.
And was she one of the people who came into the show, made it into the show? Like, her voice is in the show?
She's in the show. She's in the show once. Yeah.
Is she
only
Māori?
Needs to be there once. Cult, not Māori.
No.
Now, there's a consultant, you know. there's, yeah, I'll tell you them, actually. There's a health manager, a Hauora Māori social worker, Reitu. There's the whānau.
Mm-hmm.
There's nine.
Yeah.
Oh, a fourth year medical student.
Right.
Yeah, really great. There's a beautiful nurse who really talks about her lovely brother that was just lost his life because of the system, because the system failed him. With timing and, you know, needing... Long story. There's,
Wow, well, it sounds very diverse. So you presumably wanted it to be a diverse range of voices and...
As much as possible, you know, and maybe... I mean, Fran and I, you know, this is ongoing for us. We want to continue the... Barry Ninja's used as a teaching resource now in schools, as an educational pack that Auckland Live have created that goes out to schools with the video of Barry Ninja of me. And a discussion pack and an educational, but it's really targeted to the health curriculum, not so much the drama curriculum,
right.
Although it's useful.
Right.
Because, I mean, verbatim, it's a modality that most people can access if they're not real, if they're not professional actors and, you know, creatives.
Yeah.
They can interview people, find out their stories. Like, I've done a lot of this work with women in... with coming out of, on parole in prison, mm-hmm. and it's a way for them to record their stories and then just, you know, strip it back. And what it does, honestly, Damien, it has this magical ability to make, so avert the mediation process between the audience and the actor and the recipient, the people.
Yeah.
And the actor in the audience, yeah, it's quite an extraordinary vibe that travels through time as long as the actor doesn't get in the way.
Right.
Yeah,
and that was my understanding from Cindy. We did a workshop with her after the show, and you know, she emphasised that it's not the actor's job to interpret or to dramatise,
embellish nothing.
So
and definitely not entertain or perform.
And is that hard for you as a performer to sort of...
Yeah, that's why it is a great medium for people who want to start drama to have a go at, because they realise there is very little performing that you need to do, like get the acting out of the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just really study the wairua of the people.
Yeah.
And it will come through if you've done your homework and you really get the... you know, the nuances, you know, the body language, everything.
So in performance, you've got the speaker in your ear, the audio,
mm-hmm.
and you're the voice of the person that you're, I don't know how you say, performing or representing, is in your ear.
Yeah.
And part of our little workshop that we did with Cindy and the Keys and the Margarine was to make a verbatim, and we had that thing where we're listening to the voice of the person in our ear, and I found that, does that make it harder for you as a performer, or what does it do?
some people follow the track, and some people, depends, you know, are right on it.
Yeah.
I tend to just follow it because it's, I think you've got to have it playing because you cannot repeat things like no, that's not what I, you know, and you can't even transcribe it.
So you can't learn it so well that you don't need the audio.
Absolutely not. There is absolutely no way.
Because would you start to embellish if you did that?
Yeah.
Does it sort of, so it keeps you honest having that voice in your ear?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, keeps you honest.
Okay.
Yeah, it keeps you serving.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And watching The Keys and the Margarine, after talking to Cindy, you know, you can appreciate the absolute fidelity of to the, you know, and it was actually really enjoyable.
Yeah, especially with Nigel and Tanya, when their children, you know, first came to see, I think Nigel had passed from The Keys.
Yeah.
When we did it in Wellington, they first came to see it, they actually... saw they got to experience their dad, you know.
Wow.
And it wasn't like a actor's representation of their dad. It came through.
That's really touching. So tell us a little bit about yourself as a performer. What's your story?
Well, I started here
in Whangarei.
You're a founder member of 85 founder member Julie Edwards. We did, what did we do? We did Driftwood. And The Dream. We did Midnight's Dream.
Is that Alan Palmer. Rachel McAlpine's play, Driftwood?
Yeah. We were the Timberbones, me, Willie Davis, and gosh, a lot of us went on to do careers,
Right.
So what? I was 15. I was from Bay College.
Right.
And then...
So you grew up in Taitokoro? You were...
Kawakawa and Aupua.
Right, so is that where you're from? Is that where your marae is?
Ngāti Whakaue, so Rotorua, Nongataha, and Ngāti Whare, which is sort of, Ruatahuna, Te Whaiti, Irawera, Tūhoi. So Te Arawa Tūhoi.
Right, okay. So, but you went to school in Bay of Islands?
Yeah, my mum and dad moved,
What was that like in 85? What was Kawakawa like in 85?
Well, we didn't have the toilets. I love that. I was head girl.
Were you?
I was. Had to like tell everyone off.
To be a good role model.
Oh, yeah. I was smoking weed on the field in circles at lunchtime. You could put that out, Moana. What you going to do about Julie?
Funny.
But came here. And this is where I found my tribe, and then I went to Toy, drama school a couple of years after.
So Toy wouldn't have been going long then, would it?
It was New Zealand Drama School.
That was called New Zealand Drama School, and then it became Toy Whakaari.
Yeah, we made it. Toy Whakaari year.
Wow.
Yeah.
How, like, insisted that it...
be bicultural without it inclusive.
In 85.
So. Well, there was three of us, so Samo and me, Cliff, Hori, Māori, three Māori, and Sima, So our stories weren't able to tell Māori stories. That was Nancy Brunning and Honi Koka,
Oh, wow.
That was all Cliff Curtis.
Right.
Yeah. We made it toy.
Cool.
Yeah. We made it toy.
Awesome. That's an interesting story.
Because now I'm just going, it was New Zealand Drama School.
Mm.
But it was George Webby then, and I also went to Theatre Corporate a year before then, but I did classes there at Public Works in Auckland. It was the Mercury Theatre.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
I was too little to get into the big guns.
Right. And so you did a degree at Toy. Was it a degree in those days?
It was a diploma.
Diploma.
Mm.
And then where
I went, I got a contract. We all did the Shortland Street, gig because that was 92. Mm. But before then, went to the Fortune Theatre in Dunedin because that was when we had companies.
Right.
So I got a whole 2 years back-to-back, which was really my training ground. So we did 9 shows in a year. And I did a lot of theatre marae with Jim Moriarty.
Oh, cool.
With Te Huo Te Waitapu.
Right. What were some of the plays or some of the things that came out of that?
With Jim?
What sorts of...
What did we do? We did Te Hara... Te Hokinga Mai.
Were these sort of devised shows or were they scripted
these
shows?
These were John Broughton plays. We did 1981, which was a Broughton show.
Uh-huh.
Wetiki Maira's, Rangi Moana, Apirana Taylor's, Eklemo Batat. Oh my gosh. No, Fire Kaido. Lots of really groundbreaking theatre marae. Shows about us.
Does Theatre Marae still happen? Is it still?
Really? Jim and Helen, and they've just done a great show. Although they take it to marae, to whānau.
Right.
It's not mainstream.
No.
Yeah. So Te Rākauhua o Toa Wao Tapu in Pōneke a lot, and they've just done The Swing, which addresses family abuse. He's still creating really important work in prisons. And
Jim is?
He is. Wow. Just seen him recently. But then at the Fortune Theatre, we were really lucky because we had Roger there, Roger Hall.
Ah.
So we got to do all those first, by degrees, taking off. Middle Age Spread wasn't
all Roger Hall plays. Done.
All of them.
Wow.
Gosh, so many.
So you did 9 bookends. Shows a year.
Yeah, and we did Yeah, we did do 9 shows a year.
And that was sort of like after toy, so you were kind of like straight into full-time work?
Yeah, it's back to back. Yeah, you're contracted. Wow. And then I think it finished. Oh, and then I worked at the Mercury, and then they closed us down just before we opened Packer Girls. So the Mercury was no more, and then that went on to become ATC, way down.
Right.
Raymond took it off to Altair to the Herald.
Right.
And then eventually Colin took it and went down to the, what do you call it? Down the bottom? The viaduct, the ASB.
Yeah.
Auckland Theatre Company.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Downstage was going, so we did a lot of work at Downstage, at the Hannah Playhouse. And
right.
In Wellington.
Wow.
Some great shows there in that time. Because that was all Murray Lynch and Sunny Amy was still rocking about.
Uh-huh. Wow.
She was in Have you heard of her?
No. I've heard of Murray Lynch. He's still at Play Market, isn't he?
But, yeah, yeah.
Oh, no, I haven't. Tell us about Sunny Amy.
Okay, so Sunny Amy, she is a director, mentor, or she's definitely my kaitiaki of everything to do with caring for an artist. She first directed she directed Driftwood here at Youth Theatre. That's where I met her when I was 15. Alan Palmer, my dearest friend to this day, who created the Youth Theatre, has returned to Whangarei.
Yeah, so I heard that.
Al's here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, he went away back to UK for a while and then returned, and Jules. But Sunny is still alive in Wellington, and she was one of the first to take over the transition from New Zealand Drama School to Toi Whakaari. Yeah, she was at the Realm.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
She used to be Laurence Olivier's personal assistant. You all know that.
Really?
Sunny Amy.
Wow. Gosh, what an interesting career. She's still alive?
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
Wow.
Lives on the Kapiti coast out north of Wellington.
So,
yeah.
Is this the first verbatim play you've ever done, Barry Ninja?
No.
I've done other... Kings in the Margarine, sorry, yeah.
We did another one, Belonging, with Kili Moku Productions. Belonging was around immigration stories. Same thing. We toured that. We did a national tour of Belonging. And there was another one. There's another one I've done. I forgot what it is. But we're working on a, like, Put Up and Shut Up's like a verbatim musical. So we're working on a feature film at the moment that's based around that. That is verbatim. Have you seen London Road?
No.
Oh, you must all see London Road.
Is that a movie?
It's a movie, verbatim movie. It's about 10 years old, I think, 8 years old.
In
it was made in the UK, set in Epping, Essex, about a street called London Road. Anyway, if you...
And it's verbatim. It's a verbatim film.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting.
Mm. It's got Tom Hardy in it, too.
Oh, I don't know why I haven't heard of
Olivia
it.
Coleman,
Yeah. Okay, great. So you're going to come in. You're going to come back in. Well, Poppy and Sarah from Put Up and Shut Up are coming in.
Maybe
on Thursday.
Yeah, two maybe enough voices, but
we've only got two mics. So if you can all gather around a mic, that's fine. So just one more time, to remind you when the show is on. It's not until the second week of Fringe, Thursday the 13th. Two shows that day: one at 12, one at 6, and Friday the 14th. At 5:30, so yeah, which has got a New Zealand Sign Language interpreter. So look forward to seeing you there. You can go on our website, Whangarei Fringe, and .co.nz, and the link to the Event Finder ticket page is on there. So I guess that's us, Julie Edwards. Thanks so much for coming in. It's been great to have a kōrero with you, and hopefully the rain has stopped. For Hati Mihati's. I think it's going to be all acoustic today because they don't want to have any electric cables out.
Oh.
But that's okay. I'm sure it'll be fun. And thanks for coming in, and we look forward to the show. I'm definitely a convert to verbatim theatre. I guess what's the most famous verbatim theatre play? Is it probably the Vagina Monologues? Yep. Is that probably the most famous one?
Miranda.
Mm.
Although that's different type. There's all sorts.
Yeah, so there are lots of different types of verbatim. So it's a whole world, you know, a whole new world. But yeah, look forward to it.
Kia ora.
Thanks for coming in.
That was Julie Edwards from Barrier Ninja. So Barrier Ninja is a one-person show tomorrow here at 116, 12 o'clock and midday, and also at 6 p.m. A verbatim piece. If you're not familiar with verbatim, it's using the words, not just the words, but the gestures and the intonation and the pauses of the people whose stories are being told through the play, and it's about nine the perspective, the experience of the health of health and the health system through the perspectives of nine different people, not just tangata whaiora, but also practitioners, medical practitioners as well. It's at 116 tomorrow at midday and 6, and on Friday at 5:30 p.m. the tickets are $20. And Julie also appeared with the Put Up and Shut Up cast, which was a beautiful and moving experience, performance that a lot of us saw on Sunday. Sunday was an amazing day for music and just general. I felt like, for me, it was the crescendo of the Fringe. I felt like I just had such a great time that day, going from venue to venue. So I thought I'd play again one of the songs from that show, Put Up and Shut Up, which Sarah sent me. I really love this song. It's instantly lovable, and it's called Dizzy.
Drain the sap from me slowly.
such a beautiful song. That's Dizzy from the musical Put Up and Shut Up, which I didn't really understand. I didn't really realize was it's also a verbatim piece of work. Excuse me. Listening back to that interview with Julie Edwards that I just played, Julie's one of the performers in that show, and it's apparently is verbatim as well. And that movie London Road that Julie mentioned sounds interesting. It's a verbatim film based on interviews with people around a murder in London. So that's definitely on my to see list. I think I'll play one more song from that show because Sarah also sent one called Limbo. So Dizzy is the part when the character Rose is falling in love in 1962. And then Limbo is when her life is sort of not going so well and she's dealing with her grief. And so I will play that.
And oh,
Sorry, I don't know why it does that. Just stops. Anyway, that was Sarah McCombie, I never worked out how to say her name. McCombie, probably. McCombie. From Put Up and Shut Up, the musical. She's a beautiful songwriter, and I was sitting there thinking, who does her voice remind me of? And it reminds me of Hazel O'Connor. I don't know if I'm right with that. But it reminded me of this song, so I'm going to play this song by Hazel O'Connor called Will You.
You drink your coffee and I sip my tea, and we're sitting here playing so cool, thinking what will be. But it's getting kind of late now. Oh, I wonder if you'll stay now. Just politely say goodnight. I move a little closer to you.
Oh, that brings back memories. Hazel O'Connor with Will You, beautiful sax playing. And so we're nearing the end of the show. It's 11:48. I thought I'd just give a quick rundown of, again, what's going on today. So The Happy Prince is on again at 2 p.m. at the Octagon Theatre, and there are still tickets available. And for the 11 o'clock show, there were tickets available at the venue. So if you decide you'd like to see that, school holidays, child, not, well, it's suitable for children. It's a children's show. The Open Virtual Studio starts at 2 p.m. Go to, I forget the website address, creativetechnorthland.co.nz for more information about that and how to register and join in. The Imaginarium goes again at 3:33 p.m. as every day. In the Fringe, at 6 p.m., Soy Boys, Young, Dumb and Full of Soy, are at the Fringe After Dark Club. And then at 6:30 p.m. at 116, the final performance of Like Sex. There are still tickets available on Event Finder, so just go to the Whangarei Fringe website and search up Like Sex and click on the tile. Morris Dancing Workshop at Just Thrive is at 7 p.m. And that's free. First one's free. If you become addicted, don't say we didn't warn you. At 7:30 p.m., Laura Yakis does her show Misanthropy, a Pageant for the People of Earth at Fringe After Dark. Then at 8 p.m., Alone is at 116. This is an award-winning show, and it's a how do they describe it? A feminist sci-fi. I better read out the actual show description. A feminist sci-fi. Intimate sci-fi drama about feminism, climate change, and David Bowie. So to follow, I'm hoping to talk to Kat from the Alone cast tomorrow. And I think it would be appropriate to play some David Bowie. Following on from that saxophone playing on the Hazel O'Connor track, this is some pretty out there sax playing on David Bowie's last album, Black Star. This track's called Tis Pity She Was a Whore.
like a dude. Hold your man as I cry. 'Tis a pity she was a fool. 'Tis my fate, I suppose. For that was patrol. That was patrol. 'Tis a pity she was a fool.
"'Tis Pity She Was a Whore" from David Bowie's Black Star album. I'm playing a couple of Bowie tracks just at the end of the show because he was amazing, and I'll never stop being a fan, even though he was patchy, wasn't always great, but when he was great, he was fantastic. All right, so to finish up, I'm going to play... I haven't seen the movie, the documentary Moon Age Daydream yet, but I'm looking forward to it. And from his Ziggy Stardust album, this is Moon Age Daydream. It's been a great show today. Everything's online on the Fringe page, the Fringe radio page on Big Radio, if you want to listen back to any interviews. See you tomorrow.
I'm an alligator. I'm a mama, papa, coming for you. I'm the space invader.